Well, good morning, everybody. There you have it. We will start Lent on February 18th in the church around the world. Easter, we just heard, will be on April 5th, and the other big days, it's tradition of Holy Church. It's also in the bulletin. If you'd like to mark your calendars, be a good thing to do. In any event, sometimes I give you homilies to make you feel good about yourselves. I'm kidding. Sometimes they're more challenging. So a little bit more challenging. So we're going to start you off with a joke. Okay. Anyway, this is how my mind works. Anyway, there's this little girl. She's a beautiful little thing. And she's very curious about the origins of humanity. So she goes to her mom and she says, "Mommy, where did human beings come from?" And mom says, "Oh my gosh, let me read you the Bible." And she starts reading the days of creation and all this, and how on the sixth day God created humanity. And the girl is, "Wow, that's beautiful." And she goes to check with dad. She says, "Daddy, where did human beings come from?" And the dad started talking about how evolution and how we came from monkeys and apes and all these things. And the girl is very confused. And so she goes back to mom and she says, "Mom, dad gave a totally different answer than you did. And he said that we come from monkeys and apes." And mom says, "Oh, that's very simple, honey. I was telling you about my side of the family. He was telling you about his." Folks, I want to tell you about the three wise men today. And really, they're not just sentimental figures of our nativity scenes. They are examples of the spiritual life that we should all have. And what I want to focus on is three things that in our gospel today we see the wise men doing. By the way, we have the best window in the whole archdiocese right here of the wise men. Caspar, Melchior, Balthasar. They come to do, we see three things. Number one, they seek. Number two, they give. Number three, they adore. Seek, give, adore. Seek. The first thing that we see the wise men doing is they are seeking. Blaise Pascal, he was a 17th century theologian and philosopher, and he said there's three types of people in the world. There are those who seek, who have sought the truth of God and have found it. There are those who are seeking the truth of God but still haven't found it. And there are those who neither seek nor find. The first group, he says, they are wise and happy. Wise because they have sought the truth, and happy because they have found it. The second group, he says, they're wise, but they're not happy yet. The third group, he says, "I have no words to describe so pitiful a creature." Because I think what he's saying is that in the face of this immense mystery of life and the possibility of fulfillment and utter joy, it is a very sad thing for a human being to waste his or her life in trivialities. The wise men were not accidental seekers. They intentionally sought after the truth. They intentionally sought after Christ. They looked for clues. They studied the skies. They noticed the sign. They followed the star. They went over 1,000 miles on camels. Could you imagine the difficulties of their journeys? Whatever God whispered, they listened and followed. The wise men, they teach us to seek intentionally. And what they had to do was they had to leave their comfort behind. They had to leave behind their schedules and their distractions and their routines and their own ideas about the truth of things. They were pagans. They were pagans. And they had to leave behind all that stuff and in pursuit of the truth. And you and I, my dear friends, Epiphany, I think, asks us that question. Am I intentionally seeking the truth of God? Am I always wanting, intentionally going deeper and deeper into God? Thanks to the Lord, this is why we have the scriptures. This is why we have the saints and their lives to study. This is why we have pilgrimages, both local and far. This is why we have the writings of the doctors of the doctors and fathers of the church. This is why we have the catechism, our doctrine, our dogma. We have formed. We have Bible in a year, catechism in a year, Father Mike Schmitz, Bishop Barron. All this stuff is like, wow. We have so much resource, so many resources to be going deeper. And the question of Epiphany is, first question is, am I seeking after God? The beauty of God is there's always more. Am I always going deeper, or am I just coasting? Am I just coasting? And I think a lot of people are just coasting. And that's a terrible thing. We've got to be shaken up today. Just like the wise men were shaken up, these three kings from afar, they were shaken up by the Lord, and they came deeper after seeking and seeking and seeking. That's the first thing we see him doing, seeking. Number two, the wise men give. They don't come empty-handed. They come with gold, frankincense, and myrrh. These are costly, sacrificial, and personal gifts that they bring. And I want to read you this poem. It's from a World War I poet named Studdard Kennedy. When Jesus came to Golgotha, they hanged him on a tree. They drove great nails through hands and feet and made a Calvary. They crowned him with a crown of thorns. Red were his wounds and deep. For those were crude and cruel days, and human flesh was cheap. When Jesus came to Birmingham, a modern city, they simply passed him by. They would not hurt a hair of him, they only let him die. For men had grown more tender, and they would not give him pain. They only just passed down the street and left him in the rain. Still, Jesus cried, "Forgive them, they don't know what they're doing." And still it rained, the winter rain that drenched him through and through. The crowds went home and left the streets without a soul to see. And Jesus crouched against a wall and yearned for Calvary. The poet is saying that Jesus found the cruelty of Calvary more acceptable than our own indifference and selfishness. Now, I am very aware, and I am just amazed and admiration always of the generosity of our parishioners. I know that many of you move furniture with St. Vincent de Paul Society, and you do all kinds of things with ministries and holy hours early in the morning or late at night, and heroically raising families and seeking after virtue, heroically trying to overcome sins. I see gifts to the parish and the capital campaign that just blow me away. And in all that, I say thank you. But there are some who have never walked into our adoration chapel to visit Jesus. There are some who do not tithe. There are some who did not come to the Holy Day of Obligation Mass last week. Those are not optional. They mark the most important dogmas and doctrines at the heart of the life of Jesus. There are some who don't make much attempt to overcome their patterns of sin in their lives. There are some who do not utter a word of gratitude to God for all of his blessings. And all of this, the Lord is just like inviting us out of our indifference and selfishness and shaking us and saying, pour yourself out. He's saying it to me. He's saying it to all of us. Pour yourself out. Be generous with your energy and your time. Be generous with your kindness and charity, your wallet, your life. Be generous. That's what Epiphany is pleading from us. And don't we see it time and again in the scriptures? Not just with the wise men, but we see it with Jesus. Remember the one time? It says, you don't walk 1 mile, no, walk two. Remember Mary Magdalene washing his feet with the most costly perfumed oil. And Jesus says, that's what I want. Waste. pour out. And the other day I was reading in 2 Samuel, and I was going, where? I forgot this gem was in the Bible. Where, you know, David lived in Bethlehem, the same Bethlehem that Jesus was born in, 1,000 years earlier. And what happened 1,000 years earlier in 2 Samuel 23 is that Bethlehem, where David lived and the Jews, was being occupied by the Philistines. And they way outnumbered them, the bad guys. And here's David sitting under a tree with his men. And he's having a little pity party. And he's saying, I just want to drink water out of the well on the other side of Bethlehem. Well, that's where all the enemies were. The big army that outnumbered them. And wouldn't you know, three of David's men loved David so much that they went through, they risked their lives, and they went through that Philistine army to go to the well and get David the water that he wanted. And they bring it back to him, miraculously surviving. Do you know what it says here? He would not drink the water. He poured it out to the Lord. He said, I am not even worthy. I'm not worthy to drink the blood of the men who went at the risk of their lives. What is this saying? What I think it's saying is that so much has been poured out to us by God. So much has been poured out to us that the only really appropriate answer is to pour back to God. To give back to the Lord in heroic and generous, crazy ways. Because a life hoarded is a life wasted. But here's what I've come to realize about God. If you give Him your energy, He will replenish it. If you give Him your time, He will multiply it. I've seen it happen. If you give Him your kindness and your charity, He will double and triple and quadruple our efforts. This is the power of God, the widow's might. You give Him the little thing that costs a lot to you, and He's gonna multiply that to the exponential degree. This is the power of God. The wise men, sometimes we may go, you know, God, you're just asking too much of me. You're demanding too much. But you know something? Jesus is never going to ask you to do anything that He has not already done for you in an infinitely better way. And when He says, I demand this, and we may look at our neighbor and say, well, gosh, they're just wanting too much from me. Pour out anyways. Love them anyways. Pour out. Give, give, give. Place what is precious before the Lord. Give your life to Him. When you're in love, you'll do anything for the beloved. I've seen it with young couples in love. The world, the sun rises and sets with their person. Mothers with their beautiful newborn. What about us with God? Are we in love with Jesus? I mean in love. Because Epiphany shakes us and says, if you're in love, there's going to be proof everywhere you look in your life that you are head over heels in love with Jesus. And that's the invitation with the Lord. The wise men give. They don't give leftovers, they give it all. The third thing that the wise men do is they adore. When they get there to Jesus after their crazy journeys, they don't analyze Christ. They don't have a theological debate. They get on their knees in adoration. They adore Him. Folks, we're very blessed to have a perpetual adoration chapel. Pope St. John Paul II prayed that every parish would have a perpetual adoration chapel because he knew the difference that it makes. The wise men traveled over 1,000 miles to come adore Jesus. All we have to do is get in our cars and come to the chapel. And I don't know how many other times I have to say, but I pray, I fast, I do. And before I know it, I'm going to start sleeping in the attic for this. I want everybody to have an adoration hour in our chapel. Because do you remember in Acts chapter 4, Peter and John are living this crazy, beautiful life. And the maidservants look at each other and they said, They must have been with the Christ. And because it makes a difference in how we live, when we spend time with our beloved, love demands presence. You love somebody, it's not enough to look at them on the FaceTime. You want to be with them. And that's our chapel. Pope Benedict XVI, he said that adoration comes from two Latin words, ad oratio, mouth. Ad meaning to. When we go to the chapel, we go to the mouth of God. It's a resuscitation. It's a mouth-to-mouth union with Christ. And don't you see that makes all the difference in the world to our souls, to our families, to our world, to our parish, to our town. It makes all the difference in the world whether we choose to adore Christ or not. And it makes this...
I thought of Father Paul this morning at Mass at St. Vincent because he died on Monday. The Friday before, he left his adoration hour at 10 p.m. He had the 10 p.m. hour. I have the 11. I had at the time. Now I've moved to 10. Father Paul left that chapel and he says, you know, I cannot wait till I never have to leave his presence. We get to taste heaven here in our chapel. And I'm begging you, I'm pleading you to find time in your schedule to have an hour every week in adoration. Men, it's not enough for your wife to do it. You should do it. Kids should be brought to the chapel. It makes a difference. I learned in the ministry a long time ago, all we have to do is come to Jesus and then he takes care of everything else. And I want you to have an hour, don't you see, not because I'm guilting you into it or not because you feel like you're holier than thou. I want you to have an hour because you love Jesus and you can't imagine not passing time with him. And on a practical note, I just have to tell you that Jim Kaczynski is no longer in charge of the chapel. I'm very thankful for his years doing that. There's a new procedure in the bulletin. If you came in that way, you got it in. It's a stuffer. If it's back there, it's on a separate stack. We ran out of time. But it gives you a little bit of you don't have to call. You don't have to do nothing to sign up for an hour. You can just go onto the system. It's so easy. If you already have an hour, you don't. You can log in there and you can start a new commitment. I want as many people in that thing as often as possible. And so, my dear friends, the Epiphany, the three wise men, they teach us to seek, to never stop seeking the truth, to always go deeper. They teach us to give and give and give some more. And they teach us to adore. Because one day, we're going to knock on heaven's door and we're going to say, I want to spend eternity with you. And we want that he knows who we are. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.